So here's the thing where I knew, like, vetting Courtney Turner, that I understood what happened. I understood, like, you did not get recruited by the FBI or whatever. Yeah. Something else happened. Because I'm looking at your Facebook stuff, and I did it by year. Okay. Like, I started at the beginning, this, like, 10 years, and you posted a lot. So
yeah, I used to be much more engaged, yeah.
Yeah, of course. I'm just Facebook. So I mean, it's over. But so you would see, like, oh, now I can do the ribbons. Like, now I can bench press this. Now I'm, like, doing whatever. And it goes to, like, at one point, it's like, if you were a puppy, which puppy would you be? And then, like, halfway through 2020, it's like, masks don't even work. And then it's like, oh, I see what happened. And then after that, it's just like, oh my gosh, can you believe this? Can you believe this? Can you believe this? Oh my gosh, it's not even true. Oh my gosh, look at this, look at this, look at this. And just like, you just see, like, your, you know, the scales fall from your eyes and you're just like, well, I'm just not having this. And that's that. So I want to know about, like, that moment, and in, like, hand in hand with that, just a little bit about the politics, because there's absolutely no, I mean, the only political thing around that time or ever I saw, like, prior to knowing you, is a picture of you, like, getting at a book signing with Ann Coulter, I think.
So, okay. So I had a long interest in politics. I mean, I started a board for school choice when I was in sixth grade. I was 12 years old and I was like,
nice.
Yeah. I'm now not a fan of school choice because I realize this is a Trojan horse, but I will just...
Oh yeah. The charter schools run by Condoleezza Rice, like, or championed by Condoleezza Rice and the Council of Foreign Relations. I know.
I will caveat it though. Just my whole reason for doing that was because I went to I grew up in a town that did not have a high school. And my only option was this one school that was a horrible school and it was not a safe school. And other schools were
huge,
actually
regional.
Yeah. Kind of. And other schools were actually closer in proximity to me. And I had friends who went there and I didn't understand. So I was advocating for public school choice, which I think that actually does kind of make sense. I mean, you're already in the government system. You should.
Well, it depends on where your taxes are going. If your taxes are being contributed to them, then you should be able to go to whatever.
Well, my taxes weren't being.
I don't even get into policy stuff. Everything's a scam.
The whole thing was, and I mean, now I'm advocating. Really, I've been, like, going to the Senate speaking on school against school choice. So it's kind of ironic.
Wow, I knew you were at the Senate, but I didn't know why.
Well, I went to talk about the NACS.
But we'll have to talk about that at some point.
I went to talk about the NACS first. I was invited to do a presentation, and then I went back to do a thing on school choice, and I'll probably be back on that. But so I had a long interest. I mean, I was on the debate team. You know, that was all political. I definitely was always kind of interested in politics. But in the acting world, you know, the entertainment industry, like, most people were not aligned and not interested in what I had to say. And I lived in New York City. I mean, it was really pretty far left, you know, and I did not really align with a lot of people or the industry. So I kind of kept quiet. You know, I mean, I was never one of those people who didn't, like, if you asked me what I thought, I would tell you, but I didn't go out looking for the argument. So I didn't make it.
It was pointless. I grew up in New York. I grew up not, you know, on the border of New York and New Jersey. Yeah. And my parents, they were not Republicans, but they were conservative.
Right.
Later, I would call them, like, liberal, libertarian or classical liberal.
Sure.
But there was never, ever talk to people about politics. Like, no one wasn't a Democrat.
Well, I learned the...
Well, I mean, maybe not, but we didn't talk politics because seemed like we were alone.
Yeah. Well, I learned really the hard way because I remember as a kid, my dad was very vocal. I mean, I grew up listening to Rush Limbaugh on my way home from school every day. My dad came to pick me up from my friend's house in Cherry Hill, and it was a far drive. And they, of course, just wanted to be nice and, like, welcome him after he's now going to make another drive back home. And my dad gets into a whole conversation about Clinton. And they actually came to me and said, it is time for you to go. And I was never allowed back. So, yeah.
Wow.
So, I mean, I learned pretty early that, like, that might not go over quite so well. I actually got, penalized academically. I remember in history class, it was the first time that I confronted a teacher about it. I think I've told you this. Where I got a B- on a history paper and there was no red marks on it, like, at all. So I'm like, that's not a great grade. Like, why,
what happened
here? And she said, well, you didn't praise Fidel Castro. And it's, and I just like word vomit. I'm like, he's a murderous dictator. What was I going to praise? And she was like, well, that's why you got the grade you got. So, I mean, they were very overt about it. Yeah. And when I was on the debate team, they were very, like, it was very obvious. They did not like my stance. So I, you know, I wasn't really like foreign to this idea of, okay, maybe we pick and choose where we speak. But at some point when...
Oh, see, now that's the part of the lesson I didn't learn. Like, we didn't talk about it, but I have been a loudmouth. And I will just add, I had an experience like that in seventh grade where we were learning about the Civil War. And I was like, but why didn't they have a right to secede? I don't understand why. I mean, regardless of what they were up to, why, you know, right. why? And so we had a class debate where the teacher made me the South and everyone else the North.
Everyone
else. And I'm like... Everyone else, for sure. Everyone wow. else. And I'm thinking, like, in retrospect, at the time, I was like, yeah, whatever. She's just messing with me. But in retrospect, I'm like, but the South lost. Like, you guys had the force of history, the official narrative on your side, and still it needed to be, like, 30-1. And I still think I won just with the question, like, why yeah. were they not allowed to secede? And so they absolutely don't like the... that, but I never stop being mouthy. And boy, I've had a lot of problems over the years because of that. Dang. And it's just because I'm stupid, not because I'm like, well, I won't stand for it. I'm just like, blah, 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 blah. I'm right. You know, no.
Well, I don't know. Sometimes, I mean, eventually what led me to 2020 was really, I learned about, you know, the struggle sessions, the Maoist struggle sessions. And I was like, I don't want to be part of the problem. Autocritique hasn't worked so well for them. So maybe I should not continue that path. But I was quiet for a very long time, especially in New York and then in LA. But then in 2011, someone invited me into Friends of Abe. So I joined, this is like the quote unquote underground Hollywood conservative group. You know,
is it like Abe being a Republican?
Well, yeah.
Like Abraham Lincoln yep, as a
exactly.
Republican?
And it was a fellowship organization. As Jeremy Boring says, you know, it was so secret and so underground that, you know, that it was on the front page of the New York Times. But yeah. but so I joined that and I dated a pundit who, so then it was kind of pretty public where my views were. And he connected me with Politichicks. Because they would interview him a lot. And he would be like, actually, every now and then he would say, well, actually, Courtney knows more about this subject or has more, you know, more passionate about the subject than I am, or she has more ideas on it. Like, you know, depending on what it was. But of course, it was Politichicks. So it tended to be things that I was, you know, pretty interested in. And so they started interviewing me and I ended up writing for them. And that was back in 2011. So it's not like I was completely foreign to, you know, voicing my opinions. But I then when I was going back into, you know, when they disbanded at some point and then I was more involved in the entertainment industry, quieted that down for a bit. And then 2020 hit. And in 2020, I got fired from both gyms that I was working at. And I can't prove it, but I'm 99.9% sure it was over politics. Just when you look at the timeline of how it happened.
Wow.
I found myself like, you know, bored, alone, depressed. Everybody's wearing a mask. And because I'm hearing impaired, I actually still depend a lot on nonverbal cues and lip reading. I really didn't realize how much I still depend on all those nonverbal cues until all the coping mechanisms I spent my life developing were suddenly stripped from me, you know? So that was really, really frustrating. And it just felt very dark. And I remember I was actually supposed to do a pole competition, my first pole competition, 2 days after the lockdown started. And that was canceled.
Oh, and I bet you put so much work into that. Man, you've had a lot of disappointments.
I know. so much work into that. And I really was devastated because I don't know what people's impression of pole was, but like, I know people have a thought of like, and there is exotic pole. This was essentially a gymnastics routine with two vertical bars instead of horizontal bars. I mean, I worked hard on that routine.
Yeah.
And it was a three minute and 15 second routine. It was, you know, to be doing like that kind of high intensity. It was hard. But so that was canceled. And then I had I was just starting to line up a bunch of speaking and performing events. And that, you know, that's really hard to break into too.
Yes, I was wondering how you get all this, because I only became aware of you through your podcast over the past couple of years. And to see you with such high profile speaking engagements, understanding how to navigate that, how to book it, how to even just logistically make it happen, pay for it, I always wonder. I just feel like it's obviously you have a lot of experience. That's why it looks to me like you were just, you know, put on the scene with a bunch of like tools that I don't have. But it isn't, because you know, are telling me about the ways that you've developed those skills over decades.
Yeah, decades, right. That's the running joke. It takes a decade to become an overnight success. In my case, like
very
several
well
decades,
put. You know? Okay, well, I'm never getting anywhere, because I don't feel like I'm there yet.
You know, I'm still.
Well,
on
you'll
my
get
path.
There though.
Yeah, I'm still
because
working.
First of all, because you are willing to invest the time, money, and effort to do what it takes, and you have the ability. Mm-hmm. So there's no doubt in my mind that if you keep plugging along, you will get wherever it is you want to go, mm-hmm. especially because, unlike some of the other endeavors you've been in, this one is actually more under your control than you might think. You really don't depend on anyone to like put you in a position or to produce your show or whatever. It's manageable. Yes. So I have full confidence in you.
Thank you.
Yeah, oh, definitely, for sure. But I did want to understand like where you got the skills that put you in that top tier position. And I feel like it's just been a long journey.
It's been such a long journey.
So you got those opportunities to speak, but you couldn't take them up because they were canceled.
I will just add this. It's really interesting because I've looked at this over the past like year or two with the podcasting, and it is really just interesting. This is when, you know, your like worldview does kind of get like impacted, because I feel like it's hard not to think that there is some kind of a creator. There is some divine force, because when I look at my path, it's like, they all at first seem so disjointed. It's like, you know, an athlete, you know, psychology, philosophy. I mean, all these things look so disjointed and disconnected. And then you look at what I'm doing now. It's like all of what I did paved the way for what I'm doing now.
You know, as much as, you know, I like Uncle Ted's writings, and I feel like technology is going to destroy humanity, or at least our souls.
Yeah.
There's just a couple of things, like this ability to be truly autonomous as a creator in a way that's like, you know, comes from a place of like the nobility of man, like the philosophy, the brain, the soul, like all the things that you can put into something like this. And plus my experience with my mother being sick and dying, and the people, like the outreach that I experienced from people like I've never met physically, but I was just like, wow, there are a lot of like really good people who truly love us.
Yeah.
And when my mother, and I asked her, like, people want to pray for you, what do you want to tell them? And she said, I said to my listeners, and she said, tell them I love them. And to pray for world peace. But I was like, tell them I love them. And I was like, she loves them. Like, she loves this. Like, she loved seeing stuff like this. She loved like knowing that people were connecting. And so technology, like it has bad, but it's a limited hangout.
Yeah.
It's a limited hangout, but you can really be creative and you can make connections, and it's in your control. And I think that's, you know, that's powerful.
It's so powerful. So yeah, so there was 2020, and I found myself, I think the first day of the lockdowns, people had always, you know, wanted me to do something with my story. Actually Steve Bannon had proposed my story. He said he was going to bring it for $250,000 to...
See, that kind of stuff, like that's sketchy. Like that guy's sketchy.
Fair enough, but
actually, you do talk, and I've done it too. I've definitely shared the screen with people. I'm just like glowing, but you got it. I mean, I'm not confrontational. I'm like, and I want to talk to people. And I'll tell you, a lot of times when I'm on the screen with somebody who is sketchy in my mind, I don't like call them out. I'll just say, hey, what do you think about this? And then I hope that the listener understands what I'm doing, which is, this is the information you need to make your own assessment.
Yeah.
And I get a little hate mail, like, who is that guy? Blah, blah, blah. But you definitely do not curate people based on you're not giving them an imprimatur that you have vetted this person and you should trust everything they say. Like, you're definitely not doing, and that's the way to go. That's why I don't believe in YouTube, like advertising censorship, up or down. Like, let's not have the curation function together with the interview function or the advertising function. It just doesn't, the responsibility for that is too great. So, okay. So you're rubbing shoulders with sketchy folks.
Right, yeah. I mean, I think sometimes you can get them to reveal so much more too.
That's what I do. But you gotta, I have an intelligent audience and not everybody always catches every little thing, but they do. I try to give them what they need, but yeah. Okay. So Bannon wanted to do what now?
That story is like really, when you look at it, the history of it, it's really not nearly as sketchy or even as like fantastical as it might seem. He was peddling a skincare line, and my mom happened to be very good friends with the woman who was creating the skincare line, and she happened to be there. And so he was.
And these are Republicans, right? So these are.
There was no political involvement in this. Bannon was peddling skincare. Like, this was, this was not. Okay. There's nothing political about this. Was years ago. This was at this all point, right. It might be 20 years ago. And it was just, he was hitting my mom up he was trying to get her to invest in a skincare line. Like, and she was like, no.
He's been sketchy AF for decades, but. He was like in the failed Iran hostage rescue. It was at Reagan's inauguration. He was like a attaché to the admiralty, like that guy's.
Oh, I know, but whatever. At this time he was into the film industry, and so he's working as a salesperson with Lifetime, and so that's what he was saying. Yep. He was like, "Oh, I could pitch this to Lifetime, and I'll pitch it for a $250,000 deal." I ended up saying no because they wouldn't talk to me. Ben wouldn't talk to me. Lifetime wouldn't talk to me, and it was just this go-between with my mom. And I was like, "Well, if you don't have the ownership of your the rights to your life story, like, what do you have?" That's really how I felt. Yeah,
good point.
And I was like, I feel like that's like everything. That's your life story. So if they had talked to me, it might have been a different thing, but nobody talked to me. And he was trying to do film. And so I had another run-in with him back in 2011 because he was he would come to a lot of the Friends Vape events. And I think then he friended me on Facebook and I reached out to him.
Yeah, now that is a connection that seems organic, not like it was totally, that you wanted, but like I can see how he would definitely be there.
Yeah, and it was totally organic. And he reached out to me, and he friended me, and I was like, "Oh, I don't know if you remember, you might remember my mom." Like,
did he?
And every time I brought it up, he's kind of like, "Oh yeah, yeah." He's like, "Say hi to your mom,"
maybe.
I think he does, but yeah. So he was trying to do film. He did film for a while. It was that was, what he was into. And he was working in the film industry before he got into politics. But of course, he was starting to move his way into there with Friends of Abe. And I think a lot of those connections did pan out for him. I don't know. I mean, that seems right. Likely. So I was going to write, and I just found myself too depressed, and I had a beautiful white screen staring back at me at the end of 10 hours, and I realized that wasn't
to write like a blog or
no. I was going to start writing my story, but I've never really been able to do it because it felt like I've already outlined the chapters. I am going to start writing a book, but it's not my story. It's something else. So I'm going to start pulling back a little bit on the frequency of podcasting so I can make some time for that. But at that time, I was thinking my story, and I just have not been able to do it. I think it's just it's too hard for me. It's too close. It's too personal. It feels like, I don't know. I'm not ready yet, but, I ordered 11 books that day, and I decided it would be a great opportunity to read. And so I started reading, and the more I read, like, I started sharing some of my thoughts and mostly in like stories on Instagram, but people were arguing with me. And then I started posting medical journals. The masks were really driving me bonkers more than anything. I mean, the lockdowns were awful. I mean, I would go like an hour and a half to drive to go for a hike so that I could see a friend's face and have a conversation. I had like clients who wanted me to train them on Zoom. And I was like, this is absurd. I had a couple of speaking events over Zoom. And I was like, this is just like it is
dehumanizing.
Yes. That was really frustrating. And yeah, so people started suggesting that I start a podcast, and the idea of it really terrified me, and I knew nothing about podcasts at first. So I started doing some research, and then it dawned on me, I could have naked face conversations, even if it was through a computer interface.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah. Oh, that's super fun part of it. But yeah. What was the transition point between what please correct me if I'm wrong, but I would describe, let's say you were a conservative Republican and then what, or have you always been a classical liberal and it just me, you know, it's not you who've changed, but your understanding of the overlays from conservative to Republican to libertarian to truther to whatever, like tell me about your relationship.
Yeah, so my father was definitely I didn't know it at the time, but he was like a hardcore neocon. And I think I grew up being told he was a conservative Republican. But, you know, in hindsight, and so it's interesting because when my dad was getting sick and, you know, he was much older, and I was starting to get much more in, you know, through Friends of Abe and writing for Politichicks, I started doing, and actually that taught a lot of skills too. Anne Marie, who was one of the founders of Politichicks, she taught me a lot of those, like, just really simple thing, like this is how you hold the microphone, and like, you know, with the I wrote some articles for them, but I did a lot of on-site interviewing with them, and she really did take me under her wing, and she's wonderful. I love her so much.
So the neocon thing, it seemed to me, and I grew up in New York, in the most I've told you this before, the most Jewish county in America, and the only kind of non-Democrats I remember knowing their politics about were when I got into the honors classes in my high school. It was like a Chinese immigrant who did not speak English, a WASPy kid who ended up going to Yale, me, and 18 Jewish kids. And some of them were neocons. And so it was like my first experience with, quote, Republicans. And I remember being surprised, like I didn't think there were any Republicans because I hadn't, you know, grew up like in the Irish part of town. Right. And, you know, it seemed to me it was just because of the pro-Israel stuff that was,
so interesting.
You know, that the origins of that was like Irving Kristol, mm-hmm. and that because I have a book called Neoconservatism, the Autobiography of an Idea, mm-hmm. by Irving Kristol, and how he basically invented neoconservatism so that he could shape the foreign policy viewpoint of a very malleable and unqualified American population.
Yes. Well, Arguing the World is another, it's a great documentary kind of all about that too.
Arguing the World?
I highly recommend it.
So was that your father's angle, do you think?
Know.
Was Israel,
you know,
really important to him?
So, I mean, he was definitely,
you would know.
Yeah, he was definitely,
you would know.
Well, it's not what he led with. So I really don't know. I mean, he was, being pro-Israel was kind of like a sidebar. I mean, he was pro-Israel, but I didn't feel like I really feel like he was a neocon because of Rush Limbaugh. I mean, he was a hardcore, my parents were actually Democrats. But then when I was very little, because Carter, my mom had to wait on those gas lines and she was constantly trying to take me to the hospital and she didn't know if she would be able to make it. She didn't know if she'd have gas in the car.
Wow.
And so that was devastating for them. And then my dad was an entrepreneur and he was always being regulated out of business. The government was always clamping down on him and shutting.
My dad too.
Right? So they
lost everything. Yeah.
My mom said that they were like, well, we're going to take a crazy shot on this, you know, wild card Reagan and see if that's any better because it can't be any worse than this.
Right.
So that really was. And then, I think he became a hardcore Rush Limbaugh fan. And so he followed a lot of these, and a lot of these media personalities really were neocons. I mean,
you know, it may have been the Bush era. So later than I'm thinking, remembering where it became a single issue thing.
Yeah, I think
where the neocon Republican thing that was about Israel was a Bush era, not Reagan. So I think that's
Reagan
a little bit later
really
than,
wasn't so much maybe yet.
Maybe I'm not remembering that right.
But I mean, that wasn't like the thing that was discussed most often, you know, in my home. It was.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I know that seems valid. Yeah. And I think that's different from the single issue voter thing. Yeah. And yes, the Rush Limbaugh.
I think he did a lot of good, but he was definitely
I always say is half the time I disagree with him and the other half the time he's lying. So with Rush, like half the time I did agree with him, but I knew he didn't. He was just saying that to get people like Dennis Prager out here is like that too. It's like I feel that way about Dennis,
unfortunately. Yeah.
Yeah, he's got so much great stuff, and then he comes out with things that are like we've just But Rush, and when I went into radio, one of the coaches asked me, "Is like who's your favorite talk show host?" And I was like, "I don't really listen to too much radio, but Rush is obviously brilliant." And I tell my kids, he's one of those examples like Nirvana, where the creator of the genre is always has been, always will be the best.
Yes, yes.
Maybe I'm wrong about Nirvana, but I'm right about Rush.
I'm a Nirvana fan, so I'll take that. But yeah, so it was interesting because my mom had made a comment much later on saying, well, you're actually a lot more conservative than your father. And now I kind of realize why I don't think she knew why she was saying that. But now in hindsight, I realize because really he was a neocon, which really isn't conservative. So I don't know. I thought when I started my podcast, I really started off as very much like a Republican, thinking I was a conservative, and I had this mindset.
Who did you like as a politician? Sorry. At that point, like, did you like somebody? Who did we have? Who did we have?
I don't know that I've ever liked anybody, but I will tell you, I campaigned for Romney, and, you know, that was although he was better than Obama, I will say, or maybe not. They were both pretty awful.
Whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. That's definitely a shame moment, but.
What difference? The only thing is that good for him, he lost because he's probably not a murderer.
Right.
He would have had to have become a murderer, which, you know, you can't wish that on anybody.
No. So, I mean, I don't know that I liked anybody, but I was definitely, I went into it thinking like, we just get the right people in office. We can fix this mess. And
Ron Paul?
You know, okay, so Ron Paul is really interesting because, and knowing what I know now, I know how deceived I was about Ron Paul because I really liked Ron Paul. And I remember when I was in New York, I was seeing a guy who was a huge Ron Paul fan. He's wrong about almost everything else, but he was really right about Ron Paul and the New World Order. Like, he got all of that stuff. He was total conspiracy theorist. He loved Alex Jones and, you know, but he was really far left on most things. So it was weird. He was like a Bernie Sanders kind of Occupy Wall Street guy.
That just is impossible to pay for everything and still have freedom.
Exactly. Yeah, I tried to explain this about the school choice argument, but yeah.
If you got free healthcare, they're telling you what to put in your face.
Right? Yeah.
Totally.
So it didn't make sense to me, but he kept telling me about Ron Paul. And so I started looking into Ron Paul and I actually really liked him. But my dad kept telling me, oh, well, he's great on like, you know, fiscal matters and a lot of things he has right. But his foreign policy, he's just Looney Tunes. I mean, he's an isolationist.
That's exactly what they would say. Literally crazy.
Yeah. And I mean,
at my radio show, people used to screen out Ron Paul supporters as callers. I was like, they're the only interesting people. Like, at least they'll give you an argument.
Right.
They couldn't handle
and
it.
And I'm like, now that I've done the research on Tavistock, I'm like, they literally just like the term conspiracy theorist was weaponized by the CIA in document 1035-960. Tavistock weaponized the term isolationist because they didn't want to get to engaged in the First World War.
Yeah, and then they would say non-interventionist. Now, the original term, which George Washington, I think, used was he was a continentalist.
Yes, yeah.
Which is the only, you know, it's just rational.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, you would like to have your, borders be allies. I mean, that kind of makes sense. And that was an interesting point, actually. It's a total tangent, but that was an interesting point about in the Putin interview, because he said, you know, we share a border with China. So, yeah, that was a very interesting point that he brought up. But, yeah, I think, you know, Washington makes sense. Continentalist does make sense. So now in hindsight, I think Ron Paul was on the money. I think he was fantastic. I think he was really, really right. And I think that's why they had to criticize him and ridicule him and find something.
Well, that's why
they
had to hijack his zeitgeist and give it to Trump.
Yep. Exactly.
You know, they just they gutted
Trump
it of
is
the
not
content.
Ron Paul. He's
that was
really
so powerful.
Not.
He's nothing. He's not. I mean, I'm not criticizing. I love MAGA people. Sure. They have their heart in the right place, and he definitely was permitted to bring them all together. Yes. Whereas Ron Paul won Iowa in 2012. Yeah. He won Iowa in 2012, and that was not revealed until after the RNC. So that just, you know, makes me sick. And I've seen people like, oh, he flashes the Mason sign, his wife's a Mason, which means he's a Mason, whatever. I don't know, but it doesn't matter to me. Like, I understand the highest level Freemason thing, but I'm just saying, by their deeds, you will know them. Right. Like, if he's a limited hangout, he's the greatest limit. He's the greatest limited hangout of all time.
I agree.
If they have to give us, if their limited hangout is, we need to restore the Constitution, I will take
it. Me too.
I will take it.
Yeah, I'm with you.
And
I'm with you.
Yeah, so you can say whatever you want. You have to be more specific than, like, what, I don't even know what the signs are. Yeah. I can't even do that. I think that's the Longhorns. what are the UT? I can't even remember.
I don't know.
But I
started off and I, you know, the thing I kept saying in the beginning was that I felt like the Republicans were behaving as controlled opposition for the left. But the more podcasts I did, I started to, and the more research I did, I was like, no, they were created to be controlled opposition for the left. So I think I tweeted this pretty recently, actually. I said that, you know, people think of ideology, you know, like classical liberal, Republican, conservative, Democrat, you know, all these different terms, socialist, Marxist, whatever, all these labels. And you think that they have, that they're philosophical constructs. And to be fair, they have some philosophical roots, but philosophical thinkers often don't aren't exactly 100% aligned. It's much more nuanced. And I think what happens in practical application, more often than not, what I see is it's just target audiences for marketing. And that's really what I'm seeing.
So I want you to expand on that a little bit. And I think it may fold into my silo idea. Okay. Like, they just have silos and, you know, you can do Fox, you can do CNN, but you can't always have the Fox, you know, you can't, some ideas are okay for Fox. Some ideas they don't allow on Fox, and the same thing for CNN. And I've actually seen that in writing where, like, writers have said, like, the CIA vetted my book. I feel like it was Alfred McCoy. And they said, you can write this, you can write all of those things, but just not all in one place.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. But it's not just that. It's more like, I think, part of how narrative operations work. So people identify as, I'm a conservative, you know, I'm a Democrat, I'm a whatever. Yes. And so then there's buzzwords, you know, there's marketing, yes, and they can target, yes, them for these narratives, yes, and they'll fall right in line because, and then,
right, and they
I'm
can sell them
you,
different.
And they, yeah.
Yeah. They sell them different brands of the exact same product, exactly, because we're all drinking coffee.
Exactly.
Everybody in this country, you have to drink coffee. You can't, they won't be productive enough. Everyone has to drink coffee. You're never getting the not coffee.
Right.
So it's just whatever coffee, are you an espresso drinker, instant coffee, whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't want to get into the, I think I understand what you're saying. So I want to, okay, well, I don't want to leave just yet. Okay. So can you classify, can you tell me right now, if you have a political or ideological description, mm-hmm, that you think portrays you, or you can't
I'm
even
probably
put it into
most
words.
Closely aligned with, like, some kind of hybrid of conservative and classical liberal. I think that, you know, that's probably.
What's a conservative? What's the difference?
Well, I think the difference in conservative is, you know, the whole idea of trying to, like, conserve something. And I do like,
yes,
the idea of
the Constitution.
Yeah, I would like to conserve, at this point, conserving the Constitution. Yeah. Restoring it.
So,
yeah, that would be. Mm-hmm.
So maybe you'll appreciate an observation I made, which is when I was confused by this idea of what the right was or conservatives in England versus America.
Yeah.
Until I realized that in England, it's to conserve is to be a monarchist, which, you know, isn't the worst thing in the world. I mean, there now it certainly is, but just theoretically, it's not the worst thing in the world. But for them, a conservative, you could say it's feudal. You could say it's aristocracy, you know, but here to conserve is to conserve liberalism.
Exactly.
You know, capital L liberalism, which, you know, I don't want people to misunderstand.
No.
I mean, classical liberalism, which the word liberals now is a total inversion and hijacking of classical liberal, just for clarification. Okay, so I understand what you're saying, but I want to understand now, you decided to get into podcasting, and let's say that was, let's say, 3.5 years ago?
It was like, so what I did, I didn't air my first one until January 2021, but I spent 6 months recording. And I reached out to people, and I told them that I may never air it That I really just wanted to have conversations and I wanted to have conversations and
Samson gets jealous after two and a half hours.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It's been 2.5 hours. Yeah. I felt like I wanted to have conversations and see where it went and that I would record them. But, you know, for them to know it might not air, that I really just wanted that opportunity to. And people were very open and people seemed to really enjoy it. And I found it very cathartic because I've been so isolated and I couldn't see people's faces.
Yes, of course. Yes. Do you have those? Would you ever reveal any of those?
I might have some of them. I'd have to go back and like, it's like now I'm
You could sell it. Make it a premium product.
Right? Yeah, maybe I could do that.
I mean, you got to pay the bills, right?
I know.
I mean, you are trying to pay the bills,
really,
are you not?
We really got to work on that. Yes, we are really trying to figure that out. I'd be open to doing that. And we are starting to do some like recycling the classics. So maybe that could be a way to do it. Those would be the old, old classics. But
So at that time, if you spent that time doing that, which is typical of you, a real investment at a cost of time, effort, and money to yourself, you obviously felt like you were starting down a road of something that was, you know, you were really committing.
I was.
What is it that you were committing to? Why and how are you motivated?
I think it was really more for me than anything. I was so depressed. And I mean, like everything had kind of just like, I really didn't know what I was going to do. I mean,
were you disillusioned at all by how quickly the entire world capitulated to a bunch of bullshit?
I mean, I remember at the time, and we're really not very close anymore, but she was like my best friend. And she had said to me, and it was over the COVID stuff, she just kind of dropped me. But she did apologize. She did admit that it was completely her fault.
Because she's wrong.
Yeah.
That'll help.
But she had asked me, she doesn't sound like you're like scared of this at all. Like, and I said, no, I'm not. And she's like, why? And I was like, well, I just don't really buy it, first of all. But I was like, and if I'm wrong, I just don't, I have like a very strong feeling that even if this were legit, it's not the thing that's going to take me out. Like with all of what I've been through in my life, like.
And regardless, live for your time.
That's what I said. I finished with that. I said, and if I'm wrong, then it's my time. Like, but I'm not going to spend the rest of my life in fear.
You can only do your best.
Yeah. So I really wasn't, because I remember having a conversation with my mom about this. And she had said like, well, I don't know how that's going to be successful. How are you going to do anything with that? And I said, well, it might save my life. So there's that.
Yeah.
And that was really kind of the mindset I went into it with. And at that point, it's not like, I mean, the world was shut down. It's not like I was going to go look for another job. Right. I was training people on Zoom. And the few people I could train were in my apartment. You know, I was like, come over. We'll sneak you in. Don't wear a mask. Yeah. And like,
that was terrible. That was a terrible, terrible time.
So I went to some other people's houses and trained them. But, you know, so I was making a little bit, you know, here and there. But it's not like I was going to go out and get a job.
Okay.
I was like, I need to have conversations and I need to feel like, at that point, I've been reading so much. I was like, I want to talk to people about this stuff. You know?
Yes. Oh, yeah. The in and the out and like balancing that over time. Yeah. And, you know, there's different phases of that. So let's look at 2021. Yeah. What is your life / work, including podcasting? What is your mission statement in 2021? And what is it? Is it the same now?
So the cornerstone, I think, is really the same. I think back then, it's just much deeper now. Back then, it was really about like personal sovereignty and ownership of free will. I felt like the free will of humanity is at stake. And, you know, and I still maintain that. I think that what we're in a battle of is not Republicans and Democrats. I mean, although I think they operate through them. But I think what we're in a battle of really is people who want to enslave humanity and put us into a transhuman leading to a post-human world that they control via like an AI hive work mind that they programmed. And I think that the opponents are really the pro-humanity, people who recognize that we were endowed with free will. And, you know, obviously, people argue with me, well, you know, some people don't believe that there is free will and there's different, you know, if you don't have a biblical worldview or an Eastern. But you know what? Actually, I actually reject that because I have really started to think about that. And when you look at how people operate, they operate as though they have free will.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
I just had to tell you, Einstein, I read Walter Isaacson, who's like definitely a fed, whatever, writes great biographies. Uh-huh. And, well, I should say very readable biographies. And he wrote one about Einstein. And it was a few interesting things. I won't get into the real highlights. But one of the things I believe I remember from that is that Einstein was so sure there was no such thing as free will. He would not accept, he predicted the downfall of quantum theory because he said it would imply free will, which of course I think it does.
Yeah, I think so too. That's fascinating. So,
isn't that interesting? And even if it's not, now where would I get that thought if it wasn't really actually that I read it from him? But even if I'm wrong, it is an interesting concept. But yeah, I'm under the impression of that. So here's a guy who thought there was no free will, but actually led him to probably wrong answers, which is a good way to determine that your thesis is incorrect.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I think there's a lot of questions about Einstein, but...
oh, yeah, I could get into it, but there's like 15 things I've written down that we're going to get into at another time.
Yeah, so the only difference now is just that I've gone much deeper, and I think I was a lot more superficial in my early, my early podcasts were, they were more politically oriented. I'm less politically oriented now because, ironically, my podcasts were more politically oriented then. Now they're less so, but I've actually taken more political action. Like I've been to the Senate twice in the past month. So I've actually gotten involved in more specific kinds of things, but I don't have a lot of hope in the political system. So, and I've been more interested in like geopolitics, philosophy, the broader scope of,
Yeah, I may come full circle on that as well. Like as an anarcho-capitalist for so long and now a philosophical agorist and all of that, like I just don't really, like I said earlier, like I just don't get into the policy stuff too much. But I do think if there is something specific that you have mastered and you have a forum like you do, or even if it's in your local town and you can make that difference, I think it's really worthwhile to do that.
Because local is where it's at,
Yeah. And or even if it is something big and national, but you happen to get a spotlight on it and pointed out the flaws in something like school choice or the NAC thing, that natural asset companies.
Yeah.
So and just calls attention to it, it can awaken enough people that the powers that be have to stand down for the moment.
Exactly.
So I do think that, that's real power.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so that's real power, and I think it's worthwhile. For me, I think my natural skill, I feel a little guilty about it, but like this just daily news analysis where I'm like, oh, it's probably going to take people a little while to figure this out, but I'm telling you right now, pattern recognition,
right.
I think that's what this is. Hopefully you guys can do something with it. I feel a little lazy, like I'm just blah, blah, blah-ing.
Oh, no.
But but the geopolitics are very fascinating.
Yeah, no, I think it's great. It's not my skill at all. Like, I think you're great at that, taking like the day-to-day stuff. I don't find it as interesting, to be really honest. For me, it's like, whenever I talk about day-to-day stuff, it's usually to draw it to the broader, like, historical context. You know, the kind of, how did we get
to
today? Yeah.
What fascinates me about it, though, and I'm not sure it always translates. Actually, I did a show yesterday about the guy, Ecuador. Uh-huh. I don't know if you know anything about the guy, the president of Ecuador.
No.
Oh, the guy, he's like a glow stick. Like, he's, a glow stick figure.
Okay, yeah.
But anyway, so it was just so fun to like pull that apart. And what I love about, like, I read the Wall Street Journal and the propaganda cues are so blatant. It's so like fascinating to me that the smartest guys in the room are reading this newspaper to see what it says.
Right.
And, you know, that's just very fun for me because I find it like so laughable once you know, the scales are pulled from your eyes and you just like, it's like somebody sent out an old moon, like an old spacewalk thing that was on like Eyewitness News and you can practically see the strings like holding stuff up. Like it's so hilarious. Like you almost see the boom and it's just so absolutely preposterous. No wonder they lost all the photos.
Right.
So I do think is a way to stay informed, but upbeat, which is so critical to me. But yes, I agree that that kind of like deep analysis is way more fascinating, but with your like the geopolitics and the Tavistock stuff and the like the very big picture agenda items and of course the true power of the true nature of power on Earth and the universe. But you because you bring to that so much of that of the philosophical underpinnings that they are building their plans upon. Yeah. That's what people, it's like psych experiments that I think they've been doing for 100 years. Yeah. And, you know, their ideas of, you know, the existentialism or whatever it is that they, that drives them, which is hard for like a Catholic girl from, you know, Rockland County. I'm just like, but Jesus, like, you know, aren't we just trying to be good? You know, like, I want to go to heaven. So, like, that's not where they're coming from at all. No. And it's very hard for me to really see into their psyches, which I think is what you do and adds a ton of value. A lot of people try to do what you do, I think, and just the volume, both the breadth and the depth of what you accomplish is, it's just, it's hard to believe. It's just like a one-woman show. And I know, I know that it isn't. I know there's a man behind the woman who helps us so much and what a lovely person he is. So, yes, but that, so your mission statement has a, it hasn't really changed. It was it to expose the truth? Like, let's just say after it was, you know, aside from being like an outlet for you, is it expose the truth or is it to explain things to people? Is it, you know, what is it that you feel like you're, you, what drives you? Because there's a lot of podcasts out there. What drives you to keep delivering a lot of content every day?
Well, I don't necessarily say like expose the truth because I feel like I'm on a journey just like probably all of us are. So a lot of it is seeking. And, you know, I'm hoping that in whatever I'm seeking and discovering that I can share that and that that will shine a light. So really, I think that's really my mission is to shine the light, to spawn investigation from other people and for people to start to figure out like what resonates for them, what, you know, what dots they can connect. Because when you hear something from somebody else's perspective, then it starts to, or even just a point, like just to literally put a spotlight on something. I mean, you know, things like I'm going to do a, I'm still working on uncovering it because it's like, nobody's talked about it. There's so little, but there are these like little organizations and just to even mention it starts to open a can of worms for people that, you know, where they've intentionally been covert, you know, it's intentionally been hidden. So I don't know, but for me, really, it is about free will. It is about personal sovereignty. I think that I'm now, and I think I'm going to do a podcast on this, but I've been looking at like Plato and Aristotle, and I kind of feel like there's a psyop there.
Oh, you're breaking my heart. And again, the Catholic thing is important because I think of like the Middle Ages that the church, you know, the cloisters and the abbeys and stuff were kind of a Platonic situation. And then Aristotle came in, I think maybe potentially to justify kind of capitalism or whatever. I don't know. But the church adopted. I'm a big fan of Aristotle versus Plato because I like the individual responsibility. And, you know, that's if you have the... You have to have that responsibility if you're the one with the ability to act.
Sure. So I'll just give you the really brief overview of what I'm thinking. So I think that Aristotle has been kind of like spoon-fed to the Republicans or the right-wingers as being like, you know, very right-wing philosophy ideology. Yes. And I think that Plato has been touted as like the father of communism. And and I think it's a lot more nuanced than that. And when you really look at it, I love what Aristotle did with virtues and, you know, some of his work, I very much subscribe to. But the reason I bring it up is because in terms of what my mission is, I think of it and people who think of Plato as being the evil, sinister father of communism might not like this so much. But if you understand where I'm coming from, I think what he was actually doing is he was working within this framework of these, you know, the parasite class that's been around for millennia. Mm-hmm. It's certainly, I mean, back then it was the mystery schools that he, you know, and the descendants of them, like the mystery schools were kind of the predecessors of this, you know, parasite class that they were dealing with. A lot of what he had to do had to be covert because you couldn't rock the boat. I mean, these were the people in power, and times were very different then. You know, we didn't have the internet then. They didn't even have the printing press really then, you know? So I think that what he was doing was trying to create an academy that where there could be esoteric knowledge revealed, but through a potential meritocracy, as opposed through bloodlines and rituals initiation.
And very interesting.
I don't know, but here, so the reason I bring that up is because I feel like that's kind of what I'm trying to do, is I'm trying to get people to, who are interested, who want to put in the work, who have the curiosity, who have the ability to start looking at things, to connect dots. And, you know, I'm hoping that by my shining the light, that will create some sort of a academy, if you will, you know, of personally sovereign, you know, people.
So you bring in your philosophy background and also your art background, mm-hmm. which is going to be unique. The way I like to bring, you know, math into the language part is I think that's maybe that left right brain, you know, is a unique thing. But so I'm interested in the Plato thing as a journey going forward. I don't have the foundation mm-hmm. to really use it this way. So maybe you can direct me. But so as a hardcore libertarian, anarcho-capitalist, mm-hmm. all of that, like we are trained, and I think this is where it's subversive, is that we are kind of, I look at the government, at the monopoly on violence, and say, okay, it's illegitimate to the extent that it curtails our free will anywhere beyond where it hurts other people. But the older I get, the more I realize that, okay, yes, the government, the monopoly on violence doesn't have authority over my moral world. But, you know, I do have a moral responsibility to, I mean, I'm not going to say my community. Let's start with my family mm-hmm. and then start with my neighborhood and then say maybe my church or my parish, you know. I do have that. Now, what is that? It's unenforceable, but does that mean that I don't have a true responsibility like that? And that's where I feel like I you know, maybe understanding Plato a little better mm-hmm. will help me understand how those things interplay, because it's that's the problem with the libertarian stuff. It's very easy to except from a black and white point of view. You can do a lot of analysis. You can write huge books on economic theory, but without the surrounding, you know, soul, you're going to have problems. It can be exploited.
Well, and that's an interesting thing when you look at Plato versus Aristotle, because Aristotle was much more materialistic just in his worldview and his philosophy. And, you know, it was very empirical, materialist. That was his metaphysical background presuppositions, and Plato.
So why is it the foundation of the Catholic Church?
Yeah, exactly. So like Plato was kind of the opposite. Everything was, you know, very spiritual. Like everything was about this, you know, he very much alluded to there being a creator, and that, you know, that's why forms were the way they were.
So I really want a book, mm-hmm. hopefully it's already written, called Aristotle, Plato, and the Catholic Church, and I want it to be good and not like a subversive, you know, misguided
Plato
apology.
And the Catholic Church. Okay.
Yeah. Because Plato, I feel like the Platonic model was the model of the monasteries.
I see what you're saying. I can see that.
You know, yet Aristotle is the, you know,
is
the philosopher.
My phone just went off.
So anyway, so no. I'm all right. So now I think we need to
Now I can't hear you.
This is a marathon.
Now I can. Okay, that was weird.
Okay. So I was okay going this long with you, even though it's probably the longest podcast I've ever done in my life, because you're just a marathoner. Like you are. I knew you could handle it. I didn't even have to ask you. You have to go to the bathroom. No. Do you need any water? No, I can go several days without drinking. It's like, no. So let's, I really like the idea that this is the three-parter.
Okay.
So Angus is saying that his listeners were impressed with your knowledge. You're saying you had a good time. That's awesome.
You were awesome. Thank you.
So Angela Adams got some hot sports opinions that I I'm not going to bring into this conversation, but someday, Courtney, I would love to talk to you about actually about religion.
Okay. Yeah.
And, you know, I really would be interested from your philosophical point of view, but let's take these last few minutes and, you know, what would you like to tell us about, you know, what you're doing, what you hope to do, maybe how people can help, but, you know, I'm satisfied after having like gone through all your stuff, and it's a very, very kind of you to like, I thought it would be super fun to go through this process with you of all people, because like you are so, you just don't get offended like this. Oh, this is one thing I wanted to point out about like your ability to deal with Twitter and argument, like you've like white knighted me, which I think is very funny because I'm terrible. I hate arguments. I hate it.
I don't like them either.
I'm like completely in the wrong business. And I lack confidence because I do feel like I just, you know, I never did debate. I'm not sure I've got all the arguments. Mm-hmm. I always assume somebody else knows something that I don't know. Sure. And I want to give them the benefit of the doubt. So I'm not really good in the arena, but you are. You're fast, you're confident, and you're quite often, if not like every time, like you're right and you have a way of bringing that. Is that because of your debate experience or what?
Wow. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I don't always feel that at all.
It's true. It's definitely true.
Well, thank you. I think debate definitely helped a lot. I think some of it's just my personality. My dad always told me he thought I should be a lawyer. So I think
lawyers do have that.
When you talk
to a lawyer, like they are good like that. A litigator, they're just amazing, but it's experience. Yeah. It's a lot of experience.
I guess it is. Well, I spent a lot of time arguing growing up. I mean, I was,
He says, Jack Burton says, it's ironic because when I argue 99% of the time, my arguments are Monica's talking points.
Awesome.
But that's different. That's just, you know, I'm happy to give you information. But if whoever you were arguing with started yelling at me, I would just like, I don't like that.
Well, I try not to get into arguments. I'm not a fan. I'm not very confrontational. I really don't like confrontation. But if it gets into it, like, yeah, then I'll go. In fact, this is something I've had to kind of rein in a bit because when I was younger, people would think that I was like really being, contentious intentionally, like, antagonistic. And I was like, no, we were just having a debate.
Yeah. And they'll get hot.
Yeah. And I'm like,
they'll get pissed, especially if they start losing. And I was like, I was just explaining it to you. And it's just like, you have to be right all the time. That's what one of my sisters said. You have to be right all the time. I'm like, doesn't everybody always kind of think they're right all the time?
Why would you even argue if you think you're wrong?
It's like religion. It's like, well, you think, you know, you're right. And I'm like, well, of course, like if you're practicing your religion, you think it's right. So, although I'm not even like really sure. I'm sure I like practicing, but... Who knows?
Anyway. I get it. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. I mean, and so, I would come out afterwards thinking like, we're friends.
That was fun.
Yeah, exactly. And they're like, oh my God. Like you just.
They hate you. I know. I've had that. Like, I was like, I understand why people hate me. Like not a lot, but like some like, his wife hates you. I'm like, I totally get that.
My sister said not too long ago, she said something, you know, she would always tell me how I was so intense. And I said something, and this time I said something like, yes, I think you're just going to have to deal with it or something. And she was like, you finally owned it. And I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, at this point, I've lived
what I'm owning is
enough.
You.
Like, well, no, I mean, I think you're probably right.
Yeah.
I'm like,
apologizing
for it. It's like, I'm intense. Yeah. That's it. Like, you like it, you don't like it, I'm sorry, but that's who I am. Like,
but I have noticed that like if you're, so when I used to be an investment banker and a lot of my peers were men, or basically all of them, but their wives weren't investment bankers.
Yeah.
So like if I was dealing with women in investment banking, there was no issue.
Right.
People didn't feel intimidated at all. But people who are like in a different world, if you are like freaking Joe investment banker, you know, and you're at dinner with the nice lady who's, you know, waiting at home, like, they did not enjoy my, I'll tell you while you're wrong. You know, that was it. Listen, honey.
I can imagine. Yeah. So,
not great. No. Not great. And in retrospect, I kind of regret being, too intense.
Yes.
Let's say. I'll borrow yours. But I think I get you a little better now, Courtney, and I've really enjoyed getting to know you
to
know like the different, you know, your journey, your path. It's super fascinating since like basically the first trimester of your life.
Yeah.
to now. And actually, I think that what's going to, you know, what's going to come for you is going to be super, super cool and exciting. And you're actually, you may be quite powerful, which is dangerous.
Well, thank you.
For you, yeah. You know, it's dangerous for them. So it's dangerous for you.
For me. I'm not 100% sure what you mean by that. That sounds a little scary.
Well, I'm just a little worried that if you are, you know, I mean, I'm not even necessarily saying physically, but that, you know, we all get taken down, whatever. But if you actually like, so for me, one thing that's, there are two things I think that are dangerous, make you a danger to the state. One is to have insider information, mm-hmm. like firsthand knowledge of something. That will get people like rubbed out. But the other thing is to be like a charismatic influencer. Mm-hmm. And that I think like they'll just cancel you, right. you know, so I think that you're a charismatic influencer. You really know what you're doing. And like when you're going to move the dial on something like natural asset companies mm-hmm. or charter schools or something that is important to the powers that be, they may let it slide, but they, you know, they may come at you with bigger guns, mm-hmm. like just whether it's trolling or right. canceling or, you know, financial problems yeah. or, you know, I just, are you worried about that?
I mean, I can't say that it never crosses my mind, but I'm honestly, I just feel like I can't live my life like paralyzed by fear. So I try to live more like mission oriented. You know, like, what do I feel called to do? What do I feel like? Where am I supposed to be? Where can I do good? Where will I be inspired? And hopefully that combination will lead to a positive outcome. I just look at everything I've done. That's always been kind of how I've directed. It's never been, I just can't, like, I can't do that because then I'll just be paralyzed and...
Well, I can see by what you do that you're following your passion. Yeah. And I also feel like that what you're not prioritizing over that is paying for it. Yes. So
I would like that.
I mean, really, because what you're doing is your effort.
Yeah.
It doesn't prioritize the commercial aspect of this kind of thing. So how can people who really, like, I would definitely encourage if someone's going to had a big lump sum to give to a person, don't give it to me. Join my subscription on iTunes, my premium $5 a month thing. Yes. That you should do for me because I just want to pay for my production.
Yeah.
And the commercials are super annoying. So that's commercial free. But for you, I feel like people could literally like stake you and their money would go to good work. So what do you say to that? How can people help you? And what are you working on?
I really appreciate that. Well, I am going to start working on some. We want to do some membership type things like that. But in the meantime, we did redo the website. It's CourtneyTurner.com. So like Courtenay, CourtenayTurner. And, you know, if you want to, you know, buy products, that does help me. But I did put just general donations. So I have a Give, Send, Go. So you can just donate outright. You can do a Venmo. And then because I'm such an idiot that I can never seem to remember this, I'm going to do, I have a PO box also. So if you're inclined to.
Oh, snail. Nice.
Yeah. You could just do snail mail and just send me, financial support, kind words, whatever.
Yeah. Cause how do you pay for, you went to the Senate.
What?
To speak. You went to the Senate to speak. How did you pay? Who pays for that airfare?
Oh, no, I didn't. It was the state Senate.
Okay.
Yeah. So we drove.
But when you came out to LA, did you pay for that?
I did pay for that. Yeah. Yeah.
Somebody has to pay for your.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very expensive. And I mean, for you to do that you put the effort out, I'm in support. Because that was another thing. I was like, if I find, you know, if I like, vet Courtney Turner and there's like something under that rock, like what am I gonna say? But I fully 100% support what you're doing, your work.
Thank you.
People, I think that, you know, we're lucky to have somebody like you on our side.
Thank you.
And I just have complete confidence in your ability to discern and to represent, and that's just it's rare.
Thank you. Well, the P.O. Box, if anybody is listening and interested, it is P.O. Box 68093, Franklin, Tennessee, 37068. I know some people today would prefer a snail mail kind of situation. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, we're kind of like, I really want to go like full force this year. We do have a couple of other like, you know, potential outlets, and hopefully those will be able to monetize. So yeah, we're really hoping this year will be the year that we can do that so that we can keep going. And I am going to write a book. So hopefully that'll be something I can sell.
That's great. Yeah, yes. I always encourage, if someone's writing a book, buy them, put it on your
shelf.
Most of the time they're worth reading, but even if it's just to finance the person, like, cause I actually think that's how Obama gets all his money. Like George Soros buys 50,000 of his books every year and throws them in the ocean or puts them in the library. And that's how they get them. Like, I think books are the way to get people money.
I think so too. And I have been.
And with you, it would be a good book.
So yeah, I mean, I've been working on the concept, and I, you know, I'm not going to give it all away right now, but I had actually bought the URL a while ago, and I thought that for sure it's already out there, but I can't find anything. So it's really going to be my term. I'm coining it. And I've already started to outline it. So that'll be fun. It's just, you know, kind of dusting off the writing. It's been a while for me. So, but yeah, I'm hoping that that will be, and then, you know, they're, hopefully people will buy that, and that will help fund things too. So, but yeah, but in the meantime, people can definitely, they can buy me a coffee too. Yeah.
At CourtneyTurner.com. Jack says, reading is for nerds, but the books on my shelf make me look smart. Yeah, I totally agree. I have so many books on my shelf, it makes me look messy. So I had to put my screen back up.
The lovely man behind the scenes, actually, he's always helping me organize all these. They're like categories.
Oh, that's so...
Yeah, organized.
I need one of those.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, thank
pleasure.
You. I didn't really realize you took so long. Sorry.
To hang out with you. Well, I mean, I hope you don't mind. I'm wondering who you blew off for that last hour, because you're usually back to back to back, and I am actually back to back.
Right.
I'm talking to my friend Clint at 1:30. But yes, Courtney, thank you so much for being here, for joining us. Send me your links. I'm going to play you my new outro.
Ooh.
And until next time, thank you all for coming. That was Courtney Turner, and I am Monica Perez.